Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we'll be talking about in this episode were originally released on February 11th, 2009. But before we get into the new comics for this week, I just wanted to quickly mention, since, you know, we're known for doing stuff with numbers, this is going to be the 250th MP3 file to go down the RSS feed for this podcast. That is 79, including this of the Weekly Comics Spotlight, 71 Mayo Reports, 37 Roundtables, 18 Back Issue Spotlights, 16 Preview Spotlights, 11 Preview Spotlight Interviews, 4 Superfan Spotlights, 2 Yearly Spotlights, and a dozen other, you know, miscellaneous things. So, you know, it's quite a bit.
We talk a lot.
Yeah, we do. So, just wanted to kind of toss that out there. So, if you're new to the podcast, we've got a huge library of back stuff, which is all linked to on the website. And, you know, go check it out. We've talked about a lot of comic books over the last year and a half, 2 years.
And come join us on the forums also at www.comicbookpage.com/forum. Or I think we can also get there at forums.comicbookpage.com also.
Yep. And one other thing we're going to be experimenting with this week, and I'm sure it'll go much better than the failed experiment of last week with the solicitation text and whatnot. All the feedback we got on that was, I'm going to say, less than positive. So we're pretty much going to dump that. But one of the things we're going to do, and I think it'll go up on Wednesday, is we're going to have some a couple of guest episodes. We've got Chris Johnson, formerly of the Amazing Spider-Cast. What's the name of the blog he's doing these days?
I Believe in Batmite.
So him and Juan Castro, the two of them are going to be talking about Final Crisis. They're going to go issue by issue, page by page, sometimes even panel by panel. I've actually already listened to their first episode on that. Really interesting stuff.
Maybe I'll understand what's going on if I listen to it.
That's kind of what I'm hoping. That's why they offered to do it. And, you know, I went through, like I said, listened to that. I've got a page of comments and stuff on it that I'll toss into the forum once the episode goes up. And interesting stuff. They caught a couple of things that I totally missed. There are a couple of things that I think I caught that they may have missed. But so, you know, we'll see how that goes. You know, we at one point we're doing 3 episodes a week. We've kind of scaled back for a number of reasons. And since we got a couple of empty slots, I'm letting them use some of them. So
yeah, we haven't done a back issue spotlight in a long time.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to spend my time doing that whole job hunting thing versus reading the comics. So. But speaking of reading the comics, let's go ahead and dive into our first book of the week, which is from DC, and it's Rebels number 1, and that's Rebels with the acronym format of R-E-B-E-L-S, which stands for... Actually, I don't even know that they tell us what it stands for in this.
I don't think they do.
You were pretty good about rattling off...
Yeah, I knew it at one point. It's... something, something, something against Legion supremacy. And the L in this is the licensed extra-governmental interstellar operatives network from Legion. I don't remember what the rest of the rebels mean, so.
Yeah.
I could look it up on Wikipedia, but I don't feel like it, so.
Nah, don't bother.
I'm sure anybody type in rebels with periods in between it, and it'll bring you to a link of what it means. But that, you know, even without knowing what it is, personally, I enjoyed this more than any number one DC issue in years.
Really?
I loved this issue. It's just something about it. I mean, the writing style of it, just the way the story went, the art, I really liked the art in it by Andy Clark. Something about it just hit me the right way. I don't know what it was, but I thoroughly enjoyed this issue.
Oh, I guess the part that surprised me isn't that you enjoyed it, because I can totally see that, but that you feel that this was the best number one from DC in years. That's the part that I'm a little surprised by.
And I say number one, you know, it's not the best overall issue, but you know, when they come out with a new series, a lot of them I haven't, you know, had as much resonance with.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I was a big fan of the Legion and Rebels acronym series back in the day, which was, what, 10 years ago at least?
Yeah.
With some really good stuff. I think Vril Dox in particular is a great character. And this issue focuses heavily on him, but, and to me this was one of the weaknesses of this issue, he's a character that works best when he's kind of surrounded by known allies or subordinates. And let's face it, he's going to treat any ally like a subordinate. Versus kind of just miscellaneous strangers or people he barely knows. And most of this issue has him kind of on the run, and he interacts with some people, but it doesn't have quite the interplay that he had back in the old series. And to me, while we got quite a bit of real Dox, we didn't get him in scenes where I think it really played to the character's strengths of essentially being a manipulative jerk. This was a good issue. It had some good story stuff. I liked the connection to Supergirl and the Legion. And that's the Legion of Superheroes, not the Legion acronym stuff. But this was one that, as much as I liked it, and I did enjoy it, it's one that I don't have future issues on orders because of you know, budget constraints. And it wasn't quite enough to convince me, gosh, I really ought to go put those on order. You know, to me, this is a strong 3 or a weak 4. It's right at that edge. And while I liked what it had, I don't expect Supergirl to stick around in this series. I think she's just a guest star. That means Vril's the only character we really get to see in this issue that's going to be in it for the long term. And I didn't feel it used him well enough to totally hook me.
No, I loved his interplay with different people. I mean, when he first landed and hit that boat, you know, and just like, I'd start swimming if I were now. And then that other thing comes down on top of him. I mean, it's just those little moments like that. I loved the mnemonic trigger thing on Supergirl. We're going to probably be seeing some of the Omega Men in this series. We got Tigor here in the one scene, and I think that's going to be playing in. I really want to find out who and why, you know, these people have taken over Legion, which is why, you know, the Rebels exist, is because, you know, the Rebels are kind of going against the Legion. I liked the Quirrell Dox tie-in that they had. I mean, for me, this was a 5 out of 5. I just loved this issue. And I'm definitely going to be back for more.
It certainly had some good moments, no question about that. It just, I don't know if it's, I guess part of it is I feel a little like there was, I don't want to say a bait and switch, because that's overly harsh, but certain expectations I had from the cover, from the way it was solicited, this didn't measure up to. You know, there was talk about seeing the Legion of Superheroes, you know, guest star in this. Sure, we got one member, 2 if you count Supergirl. You know, the cover implied we were going to have a couple of different team members for, you know, his band of rebels. We got none of that. So, you know, I don't want to come across like I hated the issue, because I didn't, but it just feels like it was, I was expecting more of an ensemble book, and I got a solo character feature, essentially. And, you know, again, that wasn't what I was expecting. It's well done, it's certainly worth checking out, but, you know, I don't feel that from this issue I've got a good sense of, you know, what the series is going to be and what it's going to be about. Are the Omega Men going to be his team of rebels? Are they just guest stars? You know, how do they play into this? You know, all of that kind of stuff.
I think what you're hitting on here is that when anybody, and I've had this happen in recent weeks with other books, when you get some notion in your mind about what you want a book to be like, and then it's not that way, you tend to judge it far differently than if you go into a book with no expectations and just go with it. I had zero expectations of this book coming into it, and I just loved it. Now, if I had been expecting all those things that you were expecting and didn't get them, I'd probably be feeling the same way that you feel. But I didn't have any expectations coming into this book.
Well, I mean, the only expectations I had were really the ones that was set by the DC marketing team. You know, we were told he was going to recruit a new team to win back his command over Legion. We were told we were going to get, you know, a guest star of the Legion of Superheroes, and that he was going to base this new group on the heroes and villains of that 31st century. And while a lot of that is you know, touched on here, it's only the barest beginning of that. And, you know, it's not like I was just pulling expectations out of thin air.
I didn't say
no,
you were.
I know. I just wanted to...
I didn't memorize the solicit, and I didn't read the solicit before I came into it, and it was months ago, and I didn't remember it.
No, and that's fine.
So, you know, again, I just came into it without those expectations that you came into it with.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, there were reasons I had those expectations.
Sure.
You know.
And, you know, it's like any time anybody has expectations for any book, there's generally reasons why they have those expectations. You know, and I'm saying I can relate to that because there have been other books that we've reviewed in past episodes that I have downgraded because of misset expectations on my part.
Yeah.
I just didn't have that problem with this one.
Well, to me, part of it also goes back to the cover. I mean, half the characters on the cover are nowhere to be found in this issue, you know, and that just puzzles me. I'm sure there's a grand plan for this, and I'm sure this is going to turn out to be a great series, and at some point I will go pick up the other issues, but, you know, to me, it was good, but it wasn't great. So, it was also 22 pages of stories for, what, $2.99, so that works out to 13.59 cents a page.
Yep.
That's pretty standard fare these days.
Yep, that is exactly standard fare.
So
I call that 13.6 because I'm a one digit of precision kind of guy.
Ah, I see. Well, shall we move on to Marvel?
This was a big, giant issue of Thor, number 600. We had in this one, it's $4.99, but the main story was 42 pages. You had 18 pages of all new backups, and that's all that I counted in the price. And then you had a bunch of pages of reprints on top of that.
You had like five-page reprints for another 25 pages, yeah.
So even just the new content in this, there was 60 pages of new content, which puts this thing at 8.3 cents a page. And then you had 25 pages of reprints. It was like, wow, this was a expensive book at $4.99, but you more than got your money worth out of it because new content alone, it priced out at 8.3 cents a page. So,
well, and if you include the reprints, you get the 85 story pages, and that brings it down to 5.87 cents per page.
And then they had those pages with all the, they put 100 covers on each page. So they had 600 covers, you know, going back to Journey into Mystery number one. They have, you know, you have to get out a magnifying glass to see them, but they had 6 pages reprinting all the covers of Journey into Mystery and Thor. Of course, the first 82 Journey into Mystery covers are all, you know, monsters and such. Thor came in Journey into Mystery number 83. But still, that was an impressive 6 pages that they had there. That was a nice idea that they put that in.
I have to say, this is, I think, the biggest saddle stitch comic I've ever seen. Because usually I thought they would top out at about 80 pages or something. And we've got, what, about 100?
Yeah.
It's just, it's staggeringly big.
And after all the stuff that Marvel's been doing on, you know, raising price per page lately on a lot of books, this book was a tremendous value for the money, and the stories in it were pretty good, too. So I heartily recommend this book.
Yeah, certainly on the bang for the buck feature, you cannot beat this. My only comment on that is I would almost go so far as to say it had too much content. By the time I hit the reprints, I was, you know, I'd read, you know, 2 or 3 comics worth of story, and it's like, okay, you know, I'm a little tired now. So I actually just kind of skimmed through the reprints and didn't read them. But again, after a 42-page main story, an 11-page backup, and then another 7-page backup, it's like, damn. So what did you think of the main story?
I liked it. I mean, there were some things about it that were a little, what's the word I'm looking for? Just the, you know, Loki deceiving someone and getting Thor to do some stuff was a little, I've seen that kind of story before.
Cliche is the term I would use.
I was trying not to use that word, but that is the word that was running through my head. But, you know, it was okay. I mean, it's just like, I see the purpose of the story, you know, and what the purpose of the story is you're getting Thor kicked out of Asgard to set up the next story arc, so, or the next series of, you know, tales that they're going to be telling with Thor. So it's just coming up with a way to do that, and that's what they came with. I kind of feel like this. I mean, they set up the Father of Odin character from, you know, previous issues on Straczynski's run, so he didn't completely come out of thin air, but you didn't, you know, it just seemed like they did that now so that they could use him the way that they used him in this story, you know, so there was a purpose for that. I like the cliffhanger kind of for, you know, the end scene of what, you know, Loki's scheming up and where that's likely to go with the Asgardians. So I gave it a 4. It was a really good, solid, above average book. Liked the art, liked the story.
Overall,
it's been a good run of Thor. You know, Straczynski has been doing a pretty credible job on this book.
Yeah, overall, I'd agree with all of that. I'd also give the main story a 4. The scenes from Bor's kind of point of view or whatever, I mean, they were stylistically different because, I mean, they needed to be, and it made sense for them to be. But those, I don't know, those didn't really kind of click with me or whatever. But there was enough of the rest of the issue that, you know, I didn't mind them being there. But there was something about that. And I think it was, you know, supposed to not put me off, but be set apart from to make sure we knew it was a different vantage point and why the two were fighting.
Yeah, they used that kind of like a different coloring, background coloring, that the oranges and reds to show that you were seeing it from his point of view.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, more of the blues and soft violets that they were using in the backgrounds, and you're seeing stuff from everybody else's vantage point.
Well, and this really showed how Straczynski knows how to do some really dramatic moments. You know, everything from when, you know, Blake first turns into Thor. You know, we get this great splash page, and sometimes splash pages are a bit, you know, gratuitous or whatever, but that one just totally worked for me. And then the other part that I just loved about this issue is Thor is, you know, in this battle. The battle goes on for quite some time. And he's like, you know, maybe I can beat him, maybe I can't. And then he calls out, you know, Avengers Assemble on page 20. And I'm like, wow, that was a really cool moment, too. I loved that. And then particularly what happens because of that. It's like, wow, you know, I kind of saw that coming. But again, the way it played out, a lot of fun, really good stuff. And this is one where going in, because of the way they had solicited both this issue and the ones after it with the major turning point for Thor and stuff, I kind of went in with a bit of a jaded expectation of, they always say that, and a lot of times they don't deliver. This time I think they did deliver. This is something where the entire thrust of this story, while it does have the, okay, Loki's, you know, deceiving people and manipulating, and we've seen that before, you know, while that's not new and unique, all of that manipulation goes to a very specific goal, a very specific point, and does force a major turning point for Thor. And it's like, okay, they earned that in, you know, they justified the hype they were giving the issues after this. So overall, I was very pleased with that. Now, this is another one that I believe are they raising the price on the future issues?
I believe so, starting with 601. According to the solicitations, anyway, this will go the route of New Avengers and Hulk, where they will be now $3.99 for the standard 22-page book.
Yeah.
Now, to Thor's credit, I dropped Hulk when it went to $3.99 because I was liking it, but I wasn't liking it that much. I'm going to get Thor at $3.99.
At this point, I'm not planning to, but, you know, flip side, this one totally justified the $4.99 cover price. So, you know, it depends, you know, what they do going forward. At some point, I'll pick them up, but, you know.
Yeah.
I had a much colder reaction to the first backup feature, that 11-page one. To me, that was just an average story. You know, it was okay, it was not great, it was not horrible. You know, it was just another 11 pages of comics to me, though. What did you think of it?
I thought it was okay. I mean, I like kind of going back and seeing Thor come into that second age of the Avengers when the team was just Cap, Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch, and Quicksilver,
mm-hmm.
and how he interacted with them there. And, you know, it's a little kind of morality play there and, you know, such, but it was okay. And the Mini Marvels story was, you know, kind of standard Mini Marvels fare. It was fun.
Actually, that was the part I liked the least. You know, I'd give that first backup feature a 3. You know, not bad, not great, but, you know, it was okay. This one, I would actually give a 2 because they've got this, one, I don't want to call it a recurring joke because that implies it might be funny. You know, somebody would say something and kind of clarify it, and the person would say, I know what that word means, kind of deal. Over and over again. It was like a one-joke kind of a thing. And typically, the mini Marvels is funnier than this. You know, I thought this was a little heavy-handed and not up to par for what Chris Garuso has usually done on these things. So I was disappointed with that.
Well, I'm thinking that you usually don't get sick of it because you only get it in like a half page or one page chunks when they stretch it out to
even when
five
I read
or six pages.
His full issue stuff, which he's done a one or two of, the G-Man one and some stuff like that.
I don't think I read any of those.
I mean, certainly if this had just been one-page stuff, you're right, it wouldn't have been as grating, but, you know, I have read stuff of his that's longer, and usually it holds up better.
Yeah, well, it didn't grate on me to the point that I would give it a 2. It was amusing. It was, you know, kind of just like a mini Marvel's retelling of Thor events that have happened over the last 3 years or so.
Yeah.
Kind of compressed into 7 pages, so... My rating is based mostly on the main story.
Yeah, same here. I'd give the overall package a 4, even though I think the backup features were not as strong. The fact that there was just so damn much material in this issue, you know, impressed the hell out of me. So.
It's probably one of the most impressive anniversary issues I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, and I'd even go further to say, you know, regardless of anniversary issue, you know, aside or whatever, this is one of the most packed issues, you know, that I've seen in quite some time, you know, and it's very surprising that Marvel did this, given how much they've really kind of cheaped out on other stuff, so.
And maybe the thought is, you know, hook people in with this issue, so you're going to get them coming back for next issue when it's $3.99 for 22 pages.
I gotta wonder, though, if somebody reads this and likes it, and they get, even if they only count the 42 pages, though, you know, they're getting half as much content in the next story, presumably, because I'm assuming it'll be about 22 pages or so, and it'll be $3.99 versus $4.99. It's still going to make that next issue potentially seem overpriced. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out for them.
I'll move on to our independent book.
Sure. This is The Walking Dead number 58.
5 years of The Walking Dead is proclaimed on the cover.
Now, one of the things I want to mention about this issue, and this is something that when I typically mention it is something of a negative for me, but isn't in this case. And most of this issue, a lot of this issue, is just people kind of just sitting around or standing around talking. It's heavy on exposition. We get quite a bit of character, though, out of that. There's a lot of where we're told and not shown stuff. Very little action in this issue. But in this particular title, the way the story is structured, the way the narrative is structured, it completely works, and we're better off being told this stuff, and it's more effective that way than had we necessarily just been shown it. Does that make sense?
I mean, the way that the narrative cadence works is that it kind of alternates, you know, in peaks and valleys between issues like this one and then the ones that are just nonstop, all kinds of stuff happening, you know. And I look at it as more of an overall kind of thing as an issue by issue, even though I like reading it monthly. Whenever I open up a box and this is in there, this is always at the top of the pick of whatever I'll read first.
Well, what I found so effective, though, is because we've known a couple of these characters for the entire run so far, and there are a couple others that are new, by getting, you know, the exposition for the new characters and the recap for the old characters, it really kind of reminds us how much some of these people have been through since the world essentially went to hell and zombies started walking the earth. And, you know, I'm not much for the horror genre at all. I don't read zombie stories. I don't watch zombie films. But, you know, it's issues like this that really point out that this is a book about survival, not about zombies. And specifically, this issue is about the lengths people will go to survive. In this entire issue, there are 4 zombies, 3 of which only have kind of a one panel, you know, cameo appearance. And it's a really effective story. And, you know, to me, this is, you know, Kirkman at his best in this series. You know, he's able to really kind of string the readers along, tug at the heartstrings, and just kind of manipulate us. And you know, we kind of know how some of this is going. It's like, okay, he's doing this so we care about this character, and then he's gonna, you know, whack him or something like that, you know. But it's kind of the roller coaster ride effect with some actual depth and characterization behind it. And I continue to be impressed by this series.
Yeah, this is one of these ones where us as readers being privy to things that the main protagonist, Rick, is not privy to. This Morgan guy is going to be trouble down the line.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I like is on the second to last page, something happens. And for a moment, it's like, okay, wait a sec. What exactly did just happen? And there are, you know, a couple of possibilities that popped through my mind. And of course, yep, we find out on the next page. And again, that to me is Kirkman just toying with us. I mean, there's a certain narrative cruelty to this, the way this series is put together.
Especially since he kind of sets it up on the previous page as to, you know, leaving it open, it could go in a couple of different directions.
I thought there were two obvious ones, and he went in a third.
Right.
And that's part of what I really like about the series, is while it seems predictable and in places it is,
right,
every once in a while he throws that curve, and it's like, damn, I should have seen that coming. Now, this is another 22 pages for the $2.99, so it's the same cost per page as that Rebels one. But, you know, in my opinion, I think, you know, you kind of consistently get a little bit more value in Walking Dead than your average title.
Now, this is black and white compared to color, but the black and white works for this book.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, this is a strong 4.
Yeah, I give it a 4 also. It's just some issues will pop out and be a total 5. This one was a solid 4, and, you know, overall, Walking Dead is consistently in the 4 and 5 range. It's one of the best books that's coming out on the market right now.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
No, I would agree with that, and certainly, you know, out of everything I'm getting from Image, you know, as I need to keep cutting back and stuff, this will be one of the last couple on the list.
Yeah. I mean, this was when we had that thing on the forum several months ago about if you had to cut down to only 10 books, you know, what 10 books would you pick? You know, and we're, you know, at the time, you know, we were both getting over 100 books a month. So, you know, you're talking about trimming down to the top, you know, somewhere between 7 and 10% of the books that you're getting. And Walking Dead was on my top 10 list.
For me, it fell just shy of there. You know, if I it was cutting to only 20 or something out of that, it'd probably be on there, cutting to 10, not quite, but close. So
the other thing that makes that distinction that I think is good that it can walk that line, and I think also the reason why it's in my top 10 and in your top 20, is that I like zombie movies. I've seen all of the Romero zombie movies. I've seen a variety of other zombie movies, the pseudo zombie movies like 28 Days Later and 28 Weeks Later, where they're not really zombies, but they're sort of zombie-ish. And, you know, I like those kind of movies, so I like this. But you don't watch and like those movies, and you still like this. So he's hitting multiple audiences with this.
Yeah, yeah.
If you tend to like zombie movies, you're going to eat this stuff up. But even if you don't, it's something to give a try because it has the potential of drawing you in, even if you've never been a fan of the genre.
And I'm about as far from a fan of the genre as you can get. So, I mean, to me, that speaks of the quality of this book, that despite the fact that I actively dislike the genre, I'm really enjoying the series. So
what do you get this week?
Let's see. I got, let me flip to the right spreadsheet. I got, let's see, 26 comics and one toy. The toy was the Black Canary action figure from the Justice League International series. And one of the comics I got was a corrected copy of Mighty Avengers 21, and I'll admit to being a little confused as to what was corrected in it and what was wrong with the original version.
Yeah, I got that also. I didn't count it as one of my comics for the week. I have no idea what was wrong with the first one I got. So if anybody knows, let us know. Drop us an email or send us a link to something or post on the forum if you know what it was with the first printing of Mighty Avengers number 21 that was so wrong that Marvel had to print a second one and have them sent out.
Well, and while you're at it, what was wrong with the first issue of Black Lightning that DC had to do the same thing?
Yeah.
I mean, I caught the mistake in the, I guess, the X-Men Manifest Destiny, where they put the X-Men Spider-Man issue inside that cover. It's like, okay, I get what's wrong there. But these other ones, I'm puzzled. And we do seem to be getting quite a few of these kinds of errors these days. And I'm surprised.
Well, I can understand something that's just like a printing defect or something, you know, some printing press thing goes wrong and someone wasn't looking, you know, but something that's a little more subtle, you know, it's like, what exactly was wrong with it?
Yeah.
So I got 28 comics. I got the same Black Canary figure, but I also got Gnort and Ice from that same series. Mm-hmm. I skipped the Batman one because I've got plenty of Batmans. And then I got my first dose of the DC figurine collection. I got Batman and Donna Troy, and apparently Superman DCBS got shorted on or something, so I'm going to get him in a couple of weeks, but he also came out in that same week. And I got two of the binders and two of the plinths. Something that bugged me there was the price was raised sometime after they were solicited, between when they were solicited and when they came out. They were, each one of the binders and plinths was $1.50 higher.
Really?
Than original. Or maybe it was $2 higher, and I was getting 25% off, so it was $1.50 to me. But I got charged an extra, you know, $1.50 for each of those things. That's similar, you know, Marvel's been changing the price on trade paperbacks lately after they're solicited, and it's like, you know, come on.
And regular issues, too. I mean, it used to be that a solicitation was kind of binding to some degree. Now it's just a suggestion.
Yeah, I mean, just like, you know, I don't, if somebody has to change the price on something between point A and point B, that's fine. Cancel and resolicit at the new price. If it's that important to you to change the price, don't just change the price, you know.
Or at the very least, be up front and do a better job of communicating. Because, again, we're puzzled why they had to do corrected copies of some of these comics. A lot of people were caught unaware by the fill-in issue of Justice League of America recently. There have been a lot of kind of price hikes and things of that nature, you know, after the solicitation. It's like, how come there's no process in place through Diamond, through the publishers, whatever, to inform all of us of this? You know, I don't get it. There was some good stuff coming out this week, though. Continuing to enjoy what's going on with Action Comics and stuff.
I thought this issue was a little weaker than some of the ones that have come before, though.
I would agree with that, and I think this cover would be better suited for the next issue.
Yeah, it kind of led you to believe that that was going to happen before, like, the last page.
Yeah, so, because, you know, the whole thing is we know Mon-El is getting out of the Phantom Zone from the solicits and stuff and from the cover. And my whole thing is, well, what are they going to do about the lead poisoning type deal? And, you know, I'm reading the whole issue expecting them to address that. And, of course, you know, they're doing other stuff. Like, okay. The other one that really kind of surprised me with where it ended, but in a good way, was the Avengers Invaders, number 8.
Yeah.
You know, the twist they're doing on there for presumably the last 4 issues, I didn't see coming, and I'm looking forward to. It should be a lot of fun.
I didn't see it coming, but I kind of expected it to be coming by about the first 8 pages of that issue, because it looked like they were kind of getting to the end of what they had to do, and it's like it's issue 8 of 12. So
yeah.
Well, they're going to have to do something here to stretch this out for another 4 issues, and then they in fact did come up with something to do that will, you know, take them 4 issues to resolve. So that was good.
That's a fun series. I'm liking that one a lot.
Captain Britain and MI-13 was good.
Yeah.
I liked some of the interplay there between Faiza, if that's how you pronounce her name, and the Black Knight, and, you know, even Blade and Spitfire. I mean, there was just a lot of nice moments. This whole Dracula on the moon thing was kind of weird, but...
I'm sure that goes back to some point of continuity somewhere, but it was lost on me.
Yeah, I don't remember where that came from, but, you know, it's in, like, Dracula and Dr. Doom standing around on the moon. I was like, okay, that's a little weird. But it was an enjoyable issue. An issue that surprised me in a other direction was that Batman and the Outsiders special. I thought that was particularly weak.
You know, what got me with that is, I mean, it's leading into the new Outsiders series, which we're going to be talking about that when it comes out, right? Matter of fact, we're going to talk about that next week.
Next week, yeah.
And yeah, I thought, based on what had happened in the previous issue of Batman and the Outsiders, between Batgirl and Nightwing, and they're kind of, you know, here's what we're going to do with the Outsiders, to have this happen, just kind of, it's like, what the hell? This is almost an about face. So I was annoyed by that.
It's kind of a touching, you know, like the Batman, you know, message to Alfred. That was good.
Yeah, I like that.
But pretty much everything else in the issue, I was like, this is not good. You know, so overall, that one just didn't do it for me.
Yeah, yeah. I enjoyed Booster Gold. That was fun. I'm looking forward to the next issue where he teams up with himself. I can't imagine that's going to go well. The last issue of Nightwing was a little bit of a letdown.
I haven't read it yet.
Still
to be read for me.
It wasn't bad, but I would have liked to have seen the series end on a stronger note. I enjoyed the third issue of Last Reign, Kings of War. That's actually starting to kick up a notch in terms of the action and stuff.
Haven't gotten to that yet. Fables was good.
Of course, that's always good.
Last issue with James Jean doing the covers. So that's kind of an end of an era for that book. Green Lantern Corps, it was an okay issue. There was some, I had a hard time following some of what was going on in there. Just like very dialogue heavy at points.
I didn't think it was one of the strongest ones of the run. It was kind of a pausing point, if you will, you know. It wasn't bad, but it was far from, like I said, one of the best of the bunch.
Yep.
So a little disappointing there. Because, I mean, right now, some of what they're doing with the Green Lantern Corps, with the other Lanterns, I'm getting really excited and you know, interested in what they're doing there. And I'm looking forward to the Darkest Night and all of that kicking into high gear. So when you've got an issue and they're not kicking it into high gear yet, it's like, oh, man, you know. Another one that ended, I had quite a few series that ended on me this week. New Warriors was one of them, and it kind of ended on a note where I really feel they didn't resolve some of what they needed to resolve. That was one that this last arc was probably the best of the series, but frankly, that's not saying a whole lot, because the first 12 issues really kind of meandered, and I didn't feel that the payoff we got here justified the run of the series.
I bailed on that like 4 or 5 issues ago.
It didn't feel like a payoff. Off is what it comes down to.
Which is kind of in keeping with that whole series. I mean, that's why I stopped getting it, because, I mean, even the first story arc, I didn't feel like I got any kind of proper payoff or closure. And that's something that a writer needs to be cognizant of, you know, and we talk about, you know, what you need to provide somebody in an issue to get them to come back for the next issue. You also have to do that in story arcs. And if you don't occasionally give the reader some kind of sense of satisfaction and closure, you're going to lose readers.
Well, you got to know what the end game is, and these days you've got to be able to put that into play in pretty short order if you need to. And there was no end game, and, you know, it was a title that was there for the sake of publishing another title, not because there seemed to be a specific story that needed to be told. You know, and that's too bad. Let's see, the Patsy Walker Hellcat series ended. It was what it was, you know.
I got the first issue of that and fled screaming to the hills. So when I hear you not lamenting the ending of these series, reaffirms my decision to jump off board.
It was one of those that, for what it was enjoyable. It was not what I had originally expected it to be, and it kept the same tone and style of the first issue. So if you hated that, skipping it, the rest was a smart move.
It wasn't, you know, it wasn't worth getting, but I mean, I didn't hate it, but it wasn't something to me that justified the expense of getting it. That's the kind of thing that if I see it in a bin somewhere at a con,
yeah,
down the way, you know, because a lot of times I'm paging through the bins, and you know, in years past, I'd be doing that, and it's like I had everything that was in there. But then when I stopped skipping a lot of these mediocre series, I went to a con about 6 months ago, and I was flipping through the bin, and there was like all kinds of stuff that I found that was just stuff that I had chosen to not get. That, you know, oh, cool, I'll get that for 50 cents, you know, and it's just gives me some little things to find, because while I wouldn't want to pay full price, and I don't remember if Hellcat was $2.99 or $3.99.
$2.99.
Yeah. So, you know, while I didn't feel like paying full price for it, it's certainly worth 50 cents, you know.
I would say before getting the Hellcat one, the Vixen series that just ended, the miniseries was much better and much more worthwhile getting.
Well, I got that,
yeah,
and I liked that, so I was willing to get that at full price. So.
And then the other one that ended with a fifth issue was Freedom Formula, and it had a decent sense of closure, but overall, you know, particularly these days when there's so many titles fighting for attention and stuff, it was one that I think if I had skipped, I would not have, you know, been sorry about. I'm not unhappy I read it either, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, that can always be said of something that's kind of a standalone that's not tying into, you know, a larger narrative flow. Where,
yeah, it's only crime, if any, is being inconsequential at the moment. And who knows, maybe that would change. But yeah, flip side, though, Adam, Legend of the Blue Marvel, I've been enjoying that. I'm not saying it's subtle by any means, but I did notice what I thought was a noticeable drop in art quality on the fourth issue.
Now, that's a $3.99 miniseries.
Yeah, and I thought the art on the previous ones was much better than what we got here. So,
is that worth $3.99?
I'm paying the $2.39 through DCBS.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
you know. But is it worth what you're paying for? I mean, because you're paying more than you pay for a $2.99 book.
It comes down to if it has a satisfying conclusion. I think some of the stuff they're doing here is interesting. A lot of what happened in this issue was kind of head-on, you know, tackling the kind of the racist issue in the Marvel Universe, you know, where mutants are hated and the Avengers are loved. How come? And addressing some of that stuff. So I thought that was very interesting and reasonably well handled. Certainly not subtle. But if the conclusion of the story feels rushed, cheated, or, you know, lackluster, I'll be a little annoyed. But flip side, I think it's equally likely it's going to come out and actually tie together really nicely. And we may have a you know, the Blue Marvel back as a viable character, you know, or as a viable character, not really back, but you know what I mean. So at this point, would I have preferred it at $2.99? Certainly. Do I feel it's a complete ripoff at $3.99? No, but it's also not, you know, so justifying the price that I'm thinking, oh, wow, it's brilliant, you know. Again, they seem to have skimped on the art this issue, and that kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
Well, I passed on this series altogether, so I can't offer an opinion one way or the other.
50-50, it'll wind up, you know, being completely inconsequential in the larger scheme of the Marvel Universe, so. Or he could be the next Sentry, but in a good way.
It would have to be.
He's one that if he comes out of this series, if the Blue Marvel comes out of it as a viable character, in other words, not dead, not mangled, whatever, could be a really interesting character to toss into the Avengers or elsewhere. So, you know, I'm holding out for that. So we'll see what happens.
Well, it's kind of already for me. I mean, I haven't read it, so I don't know. But, you know, having this, hey, here's a character from long ago that... You know, you didn't see for the last 40 years, but he was there.
Well, and they explain why he was inactive for the 40 years, and it makes sense. It's, you know, basically the same shtick we've seen in two or three other places, and frankly, in a few of the other places, better done, because it was a side plot, not the main plot. And it's the whole, you've got a guy in you know, covered head to toe in spandex or whatever, huge popular hero in the 60s, up until, you know, he comes out of a battle, his costume in shreds, and they realize, horror of horrors, ooh, he's not white. You know, and of course, they're playing on the whole, you know, what was society like back then and what it's like now and how today that wouldn't really phase us, whereas back then it's like, ooh, can't have that. So they're dealing with some interesting issues. But again, we've seen those things elsewhere. That was in, I think, American Way from Wildstorm a few years back with one of the characters. And it was one out of a team and it handled fairly well there. So it's not like they're charting new ground, but they're at least doing some interesting stuff. And again, we'll see if it pulls together at the end or if it completely falls apart. So, and based on New Warriors 20 by the same writer, quite possible it'll fall apart on the final issue, whatever that issue is, 4 or 5, or actually we've gotten to 4, so it's either going to be 5 or 6. So.
Yeah, well, Grivo does not have a really strong track record with me. So he did that Zombies of Mass Destruction that I bailed on, too.
Have they ever come out with a third issue of that?
Don't think so.
Yeah. It may turn out that it's not so much that we bailed on it, but it bailed on us.
Well, we bailed on each other. I know I stopped ordering it, so.
Yeah, well, same here, but it doesn't count if they stop producing it.
Well, if it was solicited, I think more than two issues were solicited, but I don't know.
I think a
I didn't look.
third was, I don't know that a fourth ever was, because it seemed to be around the time Red 5 was starting to kind of contract.
Yeah.
Anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Outsiders number 15 from DC, Guardians of the Galaxy number 10 from Marvel, and Amber Adams number 1 and Johnny Monster number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.